From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan, the Christmas edition, the holiday edition, if you will, on the Michigan Talk Network. I'm Duran Martinez, Alex Clark, our producer in the studios of the Michigan Talk Network. Our website all over the world, wildmichiganradio.com. You can download the podcast from our website, pick them up on iTunes as they are uploaded the minute we put them to podcast. And of course, you're hearing it across the Michigan Talk Network on our great affiliates all over the Great Lakes State. And we are getting ready for, I'd like to say we're getting ready for ice at some point in time in southern Michigan, but and not even skim ice in the retention pond. But we're going to talk fishing in a minute. First, want to thank our friends at Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out of Osseo, Michigan. The deer mineral we've been using for a couple of years now, some great success with good-looking racks, good healthy deer, and man, we've got the trail cam pictures to prove it. You can go to our website, wildmichiganradio.com, check those out, and get the link to lucky-buck.com. Also, Timber Freak Game Calls. Mike Perkins building awesome, awesome grunt calls, turkey calls, predator calls. Himself, by hand, the latest addition to the Wild Michigan / Timber Freak family, posted on our Facebook page. Good-looking, hand-turned wooden game calls. And there's a link to Timber Freak Game Calls on our website as well. But let's talk a little bit of fishing as we are looking at Christmas, and by this time probably have passed Christmas. Did you get what you wanted? Did you get maybe some books to read? Well, if you didn't get what you wanted, we've got a couple of great suggestions. Of course, there's a new Wild Gourmet book put out in conjunction with the Boone and Crockett Club. Our good friend Chef Dan Nelson has contributed to that club, and it's a really good in-depth look at how to not only treat your wild game after you've taken it in the field, but a lot of really good tips on processing wild game and fish, and some awesome recipes that Chef Dan Nelson has provided. And there's a link on the front page of our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Another book you may or may not have heard about or have in your collection is Why We Fish by Robert Montgomery. Of course, he joins us on the phone right now. Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. Good to have you on again. It's been a while since we've had you on, but we talked about your first book, Why We Fish, a collection of stories from people giving their ideas as to why we fish. And there are so many different reasons why we do actually fish. And there's some great stories in that book. What is the reason you fish, Robert?
Well, it's changed over the years. In the beginning, when I write about this in the book, in the beginning, man, you just want to catch fish. You get hooked, and you want to catch fish. And that's all there is to it. But as you get older and start looking around, you see the other things that you're enjoying about out there trying to catch those fish. And today, I'm at a point where, you know, if I can get a fish to blow up on a topwater, I'm a happy camper. That does it for me. I don't have to bring that fish to the boat. I don't have to hold him up. So it changes, but fishing just makes my life better.
You know, I agree with you. Just in conversation now, I go through the timeline of my life as a kid, watching your bobber dip for the first time with a bluegill, landing that first bass, then landing that first bass to targeting fish, to learning the science. And the whole time we're teaching ourselves without knowing that this is a science class in progress that changes daily.
Exactly. You know, I know about so much about nature that I wouldn't have known if not for fishing. And you mentioned the bobber and the bluegill. For me, it was a bobber and bullheads, and I can still remember that bobber being pulled straight down into those rocks by the bullhead and me tugging mightily to get him out of there. I mean, that was one of the most exciting times of my life.
You know, speaking with Robert Montgomery, author, outdoor enthusiast, angler, Robert, I think we hit on something without knowing. Sometimes we actually make people think a little bit, but through fishing, we learn so much about biology because we learn identification throughout the course of our fishing. We learn about plant life and about water columns and things of that nature. And I think it's such a learning process as we progress to whatever level we want to be in, whatever level we want angling to take us, that it doesn't seem like school.
No, it doesn't. It's like some people can remember lyrics from songs without trying. It just comes naturally to them. For us out there in the outdoors, you're right. That's a perfect a summary of it. It doesn't seem like school, but we're learning. I mean, it's just there. I know so much about birds and frogs and water and what goes into the water. I mean, and it's all because of fishing.
Trick question. Is there a perfect age to learn about fishing?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
I said, no, it's okay. I said, it's kind of a trick question. Is there a perfect age to learn about fishing?
I really think the younger the better, but the most important thing about it is in the beginning, as I said earlier, is to catch those fish. But, you know, I would say maybe three to four. It just depends on the maturity of the child. You don't want to get them out there before they can enjoy it. But at the same time, you want to get them out there as early as you can, and you don't want them to not have other options too. You don't want them to do it the way you want them to do it. You want them to do it the way they want to do it. So as naturally and as much fun as possible. So there should be other options too, to chase frogs and turn over rocks for crawdads and all kinds of things like that.
Speaking with Robert Montgomery, the author of Why We Fish, his website, activistangler.com. You can find a list of his books there, Why We Fish, Real Wisdom from Real Fishermen. Robert, who are some of the people that contributed their stories to the book?
A guide friend, Steve Chaconis, out on the Potomac River. A guide friend down in Florida, Ron Presley, who's a saltwater guide. you caught me off guard.
Oh,
here.
That's okay.
It's been a while since I thought about that one. Let me find some more names here.
But just the couple that you've given us are a couple of very different bodies of water, a couple of really different types of fishing. But I think actually all of the basics remain the same. Just getting out.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, I had there's some women anglers. Kathy Majors from Texas is in there, and minorities. I mean, I fishing is an inclusive sport. It's everybody, old, young, men, women, and so I tried to be as inclusive as I could and get a wide variety of people contributing to that book. Teej Stover from Recycle Fish contributed. Bruce Condello, who's a He manages small fisheries. He's a real expert on doing that. He contributed. Bill Dan's contributed. How could I forget him? But Bill
right.
Dan's contributed. And David Precht, a longtime friend and vice president of communications for BASS, contributed. So
All good names. All Teej Stover, a mutual friend, and of course a member of Recycled Fish. A steward program that really helps people learn more, especially young people, about their environment and how important a good ecosystem is to fishing.
Yes. Yeah. Teej is wonderful. The organization is wonderful. I'm on the board of directors, and I can't say enough about what Teej does for the resource.
No, I had the opportunity to work with him last year at the Bassmaster Classic on one of the platforms down there. It was a great time, and hopefully we'll be able to see him again soon. But speaking with Robert Montgomery, talking about Why We Fish, his website, activistangler.com. We're going to talk more about his new book coming up in the next segment. Appreciate you joining us here. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Pick up our podcast from iTunes or on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. We can get links to our great sponsors like Lucky Buck as well. More coming your way next. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Owen O'Hagan of ClareVirtually.ie inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan, or as Owen O'Hagan says, Wild Michigan. Love Owen. What a great guy. County Clare, Ireland. The opportunity to fish Ireland for wild trout and pike on a fly rod would be amazing. Speaking of fishing with Robert Montgomery, author of the new book, Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies, Growing Up with Nature. Robert, we talked a little bit about your first book, your other book, rather, not your first, but your other book, Why We Fish. But we are never too old to grow up with nature. I mean, there's never a bad time to be introduced, whether it's fishing or just exploring nature. And tell me about the new book, Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies.
I'll be happy to. First, let me say to those out there who think that they don't like to read books, both of these books are collections of essays, and that means most of them are about 1,000 words. They're great bathroom reading. You can pick them up, read a little bit, put it down. You don't have to start at the beginning. You just look for an interesting title. So let me emphasize that these are great books for people who think that they don't like to read books. Now, Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies was just sort of a natural outgrowth of why we fish. I have a good friend out in Colorado, Blake Muhlenbrook. I've never met him, but we've known each other for years. And basically, fishing saved his life, and I wrote an article about it. He had a workplace accident, and then the medication nearly killed him. And getting out there and fishing and just being in the outdoors and enduring and putting his mind in other places saved his life. And after Why We Fish, we were talking, about how what we've learned about nature from being out there fishing. And this book is an outgrowth of that.
You know, there are many organizations that help soldiers or cancer survivors out there, and they use fishing as their therapy, casting for recovery for women that have dealt with breast cancer. Project Healing Waters, another one, dealing with soldiers with combat injuries. Fishing is not about catching. There is so much relaxation involved and therapy. Very therapeutic, and it's kind of calming, despite what it may seem like. It's very therapeutic and very calming.
Yeah, I wrote about that in Why We Fish, about all the therapeutic value that fishing has. Wounded warriors, children with disabilities and chronic illnesses, kids with autism. I mean, it's magic. It truly is magic for a lot of those people.
Now, reading one of your excerpts here on the on activistangler.com, Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies will educate you about nature's mysteries and miracles, ranging from mermaids and snake spit to African lions and Ozark dinosaurs. What is an Ozark dinosaur?
It's also called a boomer. It's a collared lizard, native to the Southwest. Here in Missouri, we've got a section of the state that the Southwest has moved up into. It's got collared lizards, it's got roadrunners, it's got prickly pear cactus, it's got tarantulas, things you would typically think you would only find in Texas or Oklahoma or down that way, but they're here. And when I first stumbled onto an Ozark boomer, I thought it was a tiny T-Rex. I mean, they run on their hind legs. And as a kid, seeing something like that, and as you know, boys especially love dinosaurs, and man, I thought I had found something, a tiny T-Rex, and I mean, it even bit, so I write about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because in Michigan, we don't really have that. We do have one subspecies of rattlesnake. We have the timber rattler here that my brother, you know, found out about firsthand, literally, bit on the finger, sent to the hospital, freaked my dad out, who's from Texas, thinking he got bit by some diamondback, not even realizing we had rattlesnakes here in Michigan. But these are things that you encounter in the outdoors with sitting at home, you will not encounter.
Yeah, and there are things that you just simply can't comprehend. And even if you spend a lot of time in the outdoors, you still miss a lot of it unless you make a point of being there when things are happening. At night, for example, I write about that in Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies. The beauty of the night and the stars and the sounds and the fact that so few people will ever truly see a dark sky now because of all the light pollution we have. It's a real tragedy.
You know, I had the experience one time up on Houghton Lake in the center part of Michigan here. I was out at a friend's cottage. He wasn't there. I got to stay the night out there. And it was one of those things. I'm sitting on the picnic table, completely clear sky on a huge body of water, just looking out over it, looking at all the stars and everything. And it's just one of those points in life where you are so relaxed, so comforted that you can say, okay, this has been a good life. You can take me now if you want, because this is awesome. You know, just an amazing experience just to be there and have that.
Yeah, it's a moment of awareness that it can only come when you're experiencing that. That because you're focused. I mean, that's where you are at that time, and there are no distractions except what's the beauty of nature that surrounds you.
Now you can pick up these books at activistangler.com. The website, the name sounds a little strong, but Activist Angler, describe that to me.
Well, I decided to start that website after I was doing some writing for ESPN Outdoors, which no longer exists, about threats to public access. And so I decided to continue that. And so it's just basically anything about fishing, but the primary focuses are threats to access and invasive species and the problems they cause. But you're likely to find anything related to fishing there from time to time, whatever moves me, because it is my website and I can do what I want. I've had problems, well, with ESPN, for example, regarding the content sometimes. My first priority is the resource, because I realize the value of fishing and clean water. And politics aside, it's all about the fishing for me and about the importance of it in our culture and our history and for human happiness.
You know, and it's very nice to know that somebody's keeping an eye on it, because as much as we love to, as much as we want to, we cannot keep an eye on everything. But if we get together and keep an eye on what's going on, both politically and environmentally, we'll have a better handle on things. Not a great one, but at least a bit more informed opinion of what's going on.
Yeah, the problem we have as fishermen is that's what we want to do. We just want to fish, and man, I understand that. I really do, but it's an increasingly complicated world, and we're getting a more urbanized population. I mentioned invasive species and loss of access. The animal rights movement is another big threat, too, that I write about there, because people, as they get more removed from nature and don't understand it, they start lobbying and pushing for laws and regulations that really are to the detriment not only to us, but to the animals and fish themselves. They just don't understand the way things work.
No, I agree, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But in the meantime, Robert Montgomery, activistangler.com, his books, Why We Fish, and Fish, Frogs, and Fireflies, Growing Up with Nature, both available there. And Robert, as always, I appreciate your time here on Wild Michigan.
My pleasure.
All right, Robert Montgomery. Check him out online, activistangler.com. We're going to talk about the new relisting of wolves on the endangered species list. Not happy about it here on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can contact us from there. Check out our sponsors on there as well. And check out our posts on our Facebook page. You can link up to there from our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Some news. Many of you probably did hear of or have not, maybe not even heard of it yet. Group of wolf experts disputes the gray wolves in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan are endangered, or that a judge's recent ruling will help the population spread to other states. Federal judge in Washington last Friday, throughout the Obama administration's decision to remove gray wolves in the three states from the endangered list. a move that bans wolf hunting and trapping in the region, right here in Michigan included, in a conference call organized by the International Wolf Center, regional experts, including David Meach of the U.S. Geological Survey, disputed that wolf hunting, as it was regulated by the three states, threatened the species' survival in the region. Also, Meach said the wolf population of the three states isn't likely to repopulate other states, with the possible exceptions of parts of the Dakotas, because of the range of the Great Lakes Basin wolf population. I could see them crossing over from Minnesota into the Dakotas. You know, they have a huge range. So, you know, we're going to get some insight on this as to maybe what happened or who was behind the delisting, the overturning that put the took the wolves off of the endangered list. Speaking with Drew Youngdyke from the MUCC, joining us right now here on Wild Michigan. Drew, you knew this was coming. We all knew this was coming. Welcome back. Well,
we knew this lawsuit was out there. Obviously, MUCC with several other organizations, including the UP Bear Houndsmen and Michigan Hunting Dog Federation, NRA, U.S. Sportsman's Alliance, just a lot of other organizations too. We intervened as defendants in this case, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I want people to realize too, though, that this is a ruling on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is 2012 order originally delisting the wolves. This is not a lawsuit on the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act. That's still going to go into effect, and I'll explain in a minute what that means as far as wolves, but that law will still go into effect. But what this does is it means that wolves are back on the endangered species list for now. Frankly, they're clearly not endangered in, you know, Michigan, in Wisconsin, Minnesota. But this is a ruling that kind of hinges on some unclear language in the Endangered Species Act. It's one judge's interpretation of what that language means. And so there may be an opportunity to appeal that to have it mean, frankly, what common sense says it should mean.
So Drew Youngdyke here on Wild Michigan with MUCC, Drew Youngdyke. Drew, it's hard to speak without emotion. Look, we have the science and the biology on our side. They have been above recovery levels for the past 15 years. But the legal wranglings of the Humane Society of the United States, the well-funded organization whose I believe absolute core is anti-hunting. We saw this with the Dove Bill. We saw this whole issue in 96, Proposal 3. We've seen it on the ballot, and what they are preying upon not only are the wallets of the uninformed, but the hearts of the uninformed. And you're looking at where, when you look at the map, there was a map that was issued. I almost believe it was MUCC, where the votes were coming from to stop wolf hunting in Michigan. It was a lot of urban areas where people, frankly, don't have any experience with the outdoors.
That's correct, but keep in mind, too, that vote had nothing to do with this. You know, this is a ruling on the federal level. Mm-hmm. That vote on Props 1 and 2 had absolutely no effect on this. You know, so here in Michigan, actually, our laws are where they should be, our laws here in Michigan. We took care of business in Michigan with the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act. That's going to take effect in March. And what that means is whenever things finally get straightened out at the federal level, mm-hmm. we will be able to hunt them here in Michigan. So we took care of business here in Michigan. Now we need the federal government to take care of business as well.
Any word on how Minnesota and Wisconsin are responding to this?
You know, we've been so kind of all hands on deck responding to it here in Michigan that I have not heard what they're looking to do. You know, the first step is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has to determine itself whether or not there's an appeal available. Mm-hmm. And then our coalition of national hunting groups has to determine if that's a course for us as well. That's going to take some time. Frankly, it's a long opinion. There's a lot in it that we have to go through and that, you know, the lawyers representing these groups have to go through. But then we also have to look at the Endangered Species Act itself. What this really hinged on is what's called a distinct population segment. Back about 20 years ago or so, that was a a policy that they could use a distinct population segment, which is kind of a sub-segment of a species, to say, well, the whole species isn't that endangered, but this distinct population segment of a species is endangered in this area, so we can list them that way. Well, if you can list them that way, why can you not delist them that way? And that's what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did to delist wolves. You know, they're not, wolves aren't repopulated across all of America, but in these areas, you know, Canada down where they have good habitat, they're certainly well above recovery goals. They're no longer endangered. We're going to take them off the endangered list.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the judge said is you can only use that distinct population segment to add animals to the list. You can't use that distinct population segment to remove them. it's just
flies
in the face
sense.
Of basic common sense. But because nowhere in the Endangered Species Act does it actually say what you can and can't do with that distinct population segment. You know, it doesn't say that clearly. So, you know, we might have to look at federal legislation that amends the Endangered Species Act to very clearly say what common sense says it should.
It's sad. You know, I deal with, I'm very fortunate to fill in on a news talk show here on the network. And look, I deal with politics a lot of conservative politics on that show. And a lot of times from either side, it doesn't matter whether it's left or right. A lot of times, man, common sense just eludes me. Eludes, you know, the basic mentality of politics in general and where this all comes from. So
right.
Inserting common sense really is almost an oxymoron in these cases.
Well, and it really comes down to this. The endangered species list is for animals that are endangered. Wolves are not endangered. There's 100,000 plus of them in Canada, or, you know, I don't know the exact number, but there's a bunch of them in Canada. They're clearly well over established recovery goals in the Upper Great Lakes. You know, so if you set a goal and said when they reach this goal, they're not endangered anymore, then they reach that goal. Guess what? They're not endangered. So they do not belong on the endangered species list.
You know, I agree. And we look at places like Alaska where hunters are allowed to take 10 in a year. We had what? I had my numbers in front of me. What did we get, 22 in our season in Michigan?
Right.
Maximum. You know, and we had 40, probably 42 allowed during that hunt. Look, we're not trying to wipe out a population. Manage.
We're trying to manage them.
Manage. And, you know, again, the common sense is not lost on you and I and the listeners of the show.
Now, and one thing, and I want to be very clear about this. Remember, all through the debate over the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act, Joe Fritz and the Humane Society of the United States kept saying, well, we don't need a hunt because farmers can shoot them if they're in the act of attacking their cows, right?
Well, now they can't.
Now they can't. Exactly right. That's a false argument. You know, they kept saying, well, if they're in the act of attacking their family pet in the backyard, then they can shoot them. Well, now that they're on the Endangered Species Act, all that goes away.
Absolutely.
So that's how disingenuous they were throughout that entire debate. And we called them on it, of course. But, yeah, now no management whatsoever.
No.
I think only if they're in the act of attacking a human can they be, you know, shot.
Well,
you know, you can walk outside and see one attacking your family pet, and you can do absolutely nothing about it.
There it is. Drew Youngdyke, MUCC, talking wolves yet again here on the Michigan Talk Network.
Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, all over the Great Lakes State. Man, this is doing three different shows in one day. I could kind of wear on you if you didn't know I fill in on a news talk format here on the Michigan Talk Network, do the classic rock thing over at Classic Rock 94.9 WMMQ in Lansing. And now I just decided I'm going to do this outdoors thing, but we've got a first-time guest. I think this is the first time we've had him on the show. Ted Harpum from Darton Archery joins us here, a Michigan company. Ted, how are you, sir?
Hey, Duran, doing good.
Doing good. Darton Archery, 65 years next year. Unbelievable. Almost unheard of anymore in the archery industry.
Well, you know, Durand, even in the, and I apologize, I'm on my cell phone here.
That's
but,
okay.
Even any industry, for that matter, you know, we're a sole proprietor. Rex Darlington, the owner of Darton Archery, has owned the company. It's going on our 65th year in 2015. And all we build is just bows. We don't do accessories. We don't do anything else. But he has just been kind of a staple in the industry with his CAM technology that he's so known for. And building bows, building high-quality bows right here in the state of Michigan.
Well, see, and that's just it. As companies in Michigan go and come and go, the archery industry is very strange. We've been going to the ATA show, the Archery Trade Association show, for 8 years now. This will be our eighth year. And people do not realize, despite the three channels and the 500 shows, you know, the three networks, this industry is very small. And to remain for 65 years in one industry, like you said, in any industry is amazing, but much less the archery industry, and you have to be an innovator, not a follower in this business.
Well, Rex has only been a leader in that technology department when it comes to cams and stuff. You know, there's multiple companies that use our cam systems, and if you look at some of the stuff, anything with a two-cam system, we'll think, or a binary, that's all proprietary Darton technology.
And it's just been amazing. I've learned of you guys over the years, and I've seen your products. And you know, you've got some new things coming to 2015. Some things we'll see at the ATA show. But can you give us an idea as to what Darton has new coming in the archery industry for 2015?
Well, yeah, we absolutely, and we're real excited about the 2015 lineup. Just since it is our 65th anniversary, we've got new bows coming out in the bow department. Which we have our new shoot-through target bow, which is absolutely—it's a design that Rex has had for a few years. He's got this bow on the market now, and it is absolutely taking the archery target archery into this thing by storm. We're actually building these bows. We're trying to keep up with the demand right now, but we do have a pro staff now, an actual pro staff, which we haven't had at Darton Archery for a number of years. That's out shooting and doing extremely well with our new shoot-through bows. That's the Vegas. And the executive. You can get online, get on our website, or get on Facebook and take a look at those bows. We've got some guys that are shooting them, doing well, winning lots of tournaments. And we also have gone down now and we've broken into the lower end of the youth market. We found that the youth and the ladies are a real high target market for us right now. So what we've done is we built a bow that's called the Recruit. And the Recruit, number one, it's got a very, very nice narrow grip on it, and it's very lightweight. It's just 3 pounds. And it actually feels lighter than that, but we put a two-cam system on it. It goes from 20 pounds to 35 pounds, and then you can adjust it from 35 pounds all the way up to 50 pounds and out to 27.5-inch draw lengths. So, and it's real exciting, very, very fast, very smooth shooting bow.
Now, we talked about this off-air. I mean, youth, women becoming probably one of the fastest-growing numbers groups in the outdoors, and they've been overlooked for so many years. It's been the guys, Ted. Come on, we can admit it. It's 2015 almost. It's been about the guys and what we want, but now we have women say, you know what, it's time for us to step up and go out and be a part of the outdoors. I got a girlfriend that's very involved in the outdoors. She purchased a Darton crossbow this year, but now she wants to make that transition into the vertical bow, and I see where the Recruit is going to be probably the option we go with.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it is exciting. You know, what's fun is to see the youth and young adults and the ladies getting involved, because now it's turned into a family sport. You can go out today. There's more and more 3D ranges opening back up again. You know, stuff kind of went up by the wayside for a few years, and now it's back on track again, where you can have a family go out, and they can have their bows, they can do their shooting, they can enjoy the sport of archery, and now the schools are getting into archery even more. The colleges are into archery. You know, you go to the Demmer Center over there in Lansing. What a magnificent facility to go and watch the archery tournaments and see that happening.
Yeah, you know, it is amazing to see the kids. You have the archery in the schools program that gets inner city kids and just kids in general involved in archery, where a lot of times that was the old recurve bear bow that the schools got that was fiberglass. That was our archery at the time.
Yep, exactly right. Well, that's all changed now, and you know, thanks to Matthews and their Joe Ed program and the archery in schools program, they've just done an amazing job in the industry, educating the youth and the schools and stuff to have that kind of opportunity. And everybody, you know, gets a spill off of that. And that's where we're kind of sitting today, and we're building a bow to get right into that market. We have the Ranger bow, which is our youth bow, our youngest youth bow. And that has got just incredible adjustabilities, anywhere from 17 to 28 inches of draw length, and all the way from 15 to 50 pounds, all in one bow. And it's very easy to put together. You don't have to have bow presses or anything else. So we're excited about that. That's the bow line, anyway. And now, getting into the crossbow stuff, you know, and we're real fortunate to surround ourselves with some really, really great people at Dart and Archery. And we've got Dave Chevalier at Crossbow Warriors, and we've got Dave over at Bow Hunter Planet. These guys have done an amazing job promoting our stuff for us as well, too, and helping us get involved and find out what's really out there today that people are looking for. Well, working with Chevy at Crossbow Warriors, he said, Ted, you know, you need to make this bow a little lighter. You need to make it a little shorter. We've done everything we could to try to fit this bill, and with the new Rebel crossbow, it's absolutely amazing.
Crossbows in Michigan have really come on strong, because what's nice about this, and I'll be the first to admit it, when I first thought about crossbow hunting in Michigan, I probably took the same approach that the recurve and longbow shooters took when it came to compound bows. I kind of looked at it going, oh, this is not going to be good for the sport. But you know what? I've changed my mindset a little bit. I am welcoming the opportunity to get more people in the outdoors as long as they educate themselves on proper shooting techniques, proper shot placement, and the fact to know the limitations of their equipment. Crossbows, I like them. They're cool. But you're not going to get that 100-yard shot that a lot of people think they're going to get.
Well, you know, it changes the whole perspective of things when you're starting to look at an animal at 100 yards, or even 50 yards for that matter, you know, in the woods, when they're moving. It's one thing to go out and shoot foam, but when you're out there shooting an actual animal and you're out there to make a humane harvest, the shots beyond that is not what you're looking for. So we want to, two things that we try to do the most in the archery industry is, number one, build a very, very safe archery equipment. Our crossbows have the number one safest finger protection in the entire industry. Nobody has better finger protection than Dart and Archery. And you'll see a lot of companies that have started to put better finger protection on now after they've seen what we've done with the front forearm on our crossbows. The next thing is the safety mechanisms, the anti-dry fires, the safeties, the things that we want to make sure that you absolutely have no question it is at 100% fail-safe.
You know, speaking with Ted Harpham from Dart and Archery here on Wild Michigan, I tell you, man, I'd never shot a crossbow ever in my life. And I even held out when I saw you at the last Woods and Water show. My girlfriend Sarah shot one for the first time. She went out and bought one. Next thing you know, she's in the tree stand. But I finally shot, okay, I'll cave. I finally shot her Scorpion 2. Liked it a lot. It's cool. I still dig my vertical bow. But, you know, when it came to at the end of the night where we're taking the bolt out, okay, I'll admit, I took the shot. I took the shot to the target,
you know,
when she let me.
Weapon of choice. You know, and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, how many guys have multiple rifles?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
And you have rifles for everything. In archery equipment, you have either a compound or a crossbow, or you have a compound and crossbow. And that's what I try to tell guys. Look, if you're going to hunt a late season in this type of climate, there's a lot of times out here today, and this year so far isn't one of them, but, you know, last year, picture how, you know, this year, this time last year, we had snow up to our waist.
Sure.
The temperatures were frigid. You couldn't draw a bow and take a humane shot. I mean, it was just too cold. So a crossbow was a perfect weapon to have in the woods and be able to go out and harvest one of these great Michigan whitetails.
No, it definitely gives you the opportunity to extend your season, which is nice for bow hunters like myself. You know, look, man, we know full well what that cold can do to you when it comes to the outdoors. Your muscles will not comply. When you're that cold, you can't draw your bow, and you might miss the opportunity of a lifetime. But if you have that option, you feel like taking that option of a crossbow, you know, there it is. There
absolutely.
It is.
Absolutely. You know, and I challenge everybody to go out to the local dealers and experience the Dart and difference. Experience, you know, how our crossbows work, how our bows shoot, our draw cycle, our speed, you know, the quietness, the balance of our bows. We have just done an amazing job. Rex has done an amazing job as a lead engineer and owner of Dart and Archery to make sure these bows are absolutely the most shootable bows in the industry.
All right, Ted Harpham, appreciate you joining us. DartandArchery.com. Thanks so much for joining us here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Durant.
Make sure to hit up our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find a link to all of our sponsors, Timber Freak Game Calls, also Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, all links. And find the links on our Meet the Expert page as well. You can find our guests there that we have here on the show quite often. wildmichiganradio.com on Facebook and, of course, the Michigan Talk Network.